My name is Bob Ball, and I'm in my middle 70s now. I originally joined the Army underage at the end of World War II and was able to get over to Germany before the war ended, but they found out that I was underage and shipped me back home. I went back to Europe in 1948 to study at the Sorbonne. And while there, another fellow and I took a trip around the Mediterranean. We happened to end up in Palestine the day that it became Israel. And since we both had military service, we were asked to help train Israeli displaced persons that were coming in from Europe. So we did that for about 3 months. Then we went back to the Sorbonne. I had joined the Army Reserve to make some money while I was at college. And the day that I graduated, which was in 1952, I was called back into service again. And was almost immediately, shipped to Korea. And I was with the 187th Regimental Combat Team. And after the better part of a year in Korea, I still had a year's service to do, and I was given the chance to go to Eniwetok and Bikini for the H-bomb test, Operation Castle. I had gotten to Fort Stoneman in San Francisco on the way back from Korea, and at Stoneman I was offered the chance to take out about 35 MPs to Eniwetok and Bikini. But at first we thought we were going to Hawaii and we were going to be stationed there. But then, and there was a group behind us that was supposed to be going to Eniwetok, but they couldn't get cleared through fast enough, so they decided to take our group. And all of a sudden, instead of Hawaii, it was Eniwetok. And in fact, at that point, my mother told me that the counterintelligence and military intelligence had been there checking up on my background and so forth, because we had to get the highest clearance possible in the service at that time, which was a Q clearance. And so everybody that got it went. They checked me from stem to stern and went back to the day I was born and tracked everything from there. And we had to go around and get our shots, everything that we would need out there within a period of 1 or 2 days. And everybody was passing out from the shots and very sick. So we went out on the U.S. Naval Transport, the General Morton. I happened to be the highest ranking enlisted man in the Army detachment, so I was put in charge of all of the Army troops aboard ship. And that was nice because I ended up in a stateroom with five Navy chiefs. And at that time I was just a corporal. But as soon as I got to Eniwetok, they were so shy of experienced men and needed some people with rank, so they made me a sergeant, and I eventually ended up as first sergeant of the detachment. And that's how I got to Eniwetok. We had storms out there where the waves would go right across the islands, and you had to stay in what they called the reefer buildings, which were the only really permanent structures on the island, the refrigerator units. So we'd be sitting on top of machinery in there while the waves went by on underneath us. So it was not a lot of fun during a monsoon or a typhoon out there. That only happened twice that I remember, but it was bad enough. Mm-hmm. Everybody was warned right from the word go, don't talk about anything that you see. Anything that you see or are associated with stays out there. And that's why when I met all of the physicists and the atomic scientists, I couldn't say this. When I saw the bombs go off, you couldn't describe it. I remember one guy did to his girlfriend who worked in Washington, and he was immediately arrested and put on a plane and sent back to Hawaii. And I never heard what happened to him, but they had a way of making sure that you didn't talk about it. And since then, well, I was rubbing elbows with a lot of very famous men, and it was quite interesting. I didn't know I was sitting on top of the H-bomb one time, and I can't think of his name. Dr. Edward Teller came in, and in his Hungarian accent said, "Do you know what you're sitting on, son?" And I said, "No, sir." He says, "Well, if I were you, I'd move." So I did. So and I realized what it was. And you couldn't, you would never have known it was a bomb. It looked like a great big boiler with gauges and pipes and all kinds of bells and whistles on it. You knew it was a weapon, but it looked like just something that Rube Goldberg had put together. And back in those days, Rube Goldberg was a cartoonist that would make up crazy inventions. And that's what we thought of this. It was just some crazy, you know, great big boiler with some tubes coming out of it. But that was the H-bomb. You never knew at that point whether there was any radiation coming out of it or whether it was safe to be around. You assumed that it was, but then they didn't know the possibilities of radiation and what the effects would be on any of the troops out there. They never thought that it was going to be harmful to us, even though it was. And now, today, I had to... I've had my right hand opened up completely because when they went into it, they had to rebuild it because all of the bone had turned black and was as fragile as eggshell. So they had to clean all the bone out of the center part of my right hand and fuse everything together in there. It works fine, but it aches every day of my life, every day. And at nighttime, it throbs like a toothache. So, and I'm sure there's arthritis getting in there, too. But that's part of what I inherited from Inuitok and Bikini. But that came about because at Bikini, after the H-bomb went off, we were back ashore within 6 hours. And I'm talking about exactly about 2 miles from the blast. And this had rolled over this island, the Sait Nan, and we came back ashore, climbed aboard. There were only a few of us, MPs and officers and some of the scientists, and we climbed into the jeeps that we had left there, which were highly radioactive, and that's where probably my hand from being around the steering wheel was picked up the radiation. And we went down to where I had had a headquarters hut on the inland or the inner lagoon side of the atoll. And this was a fairly sturdy hut, about 15 by 20, and had a roof, it was very well set up. The bomb blast had hit in front of the hut, bounced over it, and destroyed everything behind it, but it only picked the headquarters hut up and moved it back about 6 or 8 inches. My radio still worked. There were Coke bottles full of Coke still sitting there that were undamaged. I'm sure they're highly radioactive. We weren't supposed to touch or take anything out of there, but I had some pictures of my family and my girlfriend, which I took, and never told anybody about that. And then we spent the better part of 2 days there, and then later on we were down at Sait Ter, and I took about 12 men ashore, 12 to 15 men, and we were just there to make sure that nobody came ashore and stole anything, because everybody's possessions were just completely destroyed and left open. And the day started to, you know, get to late in the day, and nobody had shown up to see us. So I got on the radio, which still worked, and I was able to contact the command ship. And the person that answered the radio was a major general out there. And I told him what the situation was, that we had heard that the fallout was coming back over the island. And they hadn't expected this. And it came over the island, and it was just like a very, very light rain of ash. And you could see it. And you'd hold something over your head, and you could see it coming down like ash rain. So we knew it was because we could hear the radio traffic. And they were shipped. The ships were all buttoning up, meaning shut down their air conditioning, closed all of their openings to the outside. And that's when I was trying to get hold of somebody to come and get us. And they forgot that we were out there. And I said, what can we do, General? And he said, take pieces of canvas, cardboard, plywood, anything, hold it over your head, and we'll get LCI in there as quickly as we can to get you off the island. Because they were getting ready to pull out of the atoll, and they had forgotten that we were there. And I had, in fact, had told everybody to get undercover. So they were standing, there was a little cover out at one of the docks, and there were about seven or eight guys standing under that. And the other fellows were under tent piece sections that they could pick up and put up on top of poles. So finally I see a LCI, a little infantry landing craft, coming in. And there's two guys in the bow that had radiation suits on, and one guy steering it at the stern. And they're all in radiation suits. So we knew that, uh-oh. And so we got aboard the LCI, and it started taking us back out to the command ship. And at that point, they said, okay, you're going to get hosed down when you get out to the command ship, but take everything off and throw it overboard, which we did. And then we get to the ship, and they hose us down with water out of the lagoon, which is highly radioactive, and then said, okay, go on up board ship and take another shower, which we did. And I'm sure that we got an awful lot more radiation than what they told us we did. Later on, they told me that my exposure was to radiation was very minimal. I don't believe that for a minute. And I know that it had to be, they were talking about millirentgens, and I'm sure that what we had been exposed to was measured in dozens, if not hundreds, of rentgens. So, anyhow, that was the fallout effect. Seeing the H-bomb go off was like looking into the mouth of hell. It was so huge that in the time it takes me to tell you, we were 25 miles away, and it was right over our head before I could, in just that short a time. And it was just boiling reds and different colors inside this black column. And you could just see everything going up and up and up, and the cloud, mushroom cloud, would spread over everybody. And then the officers got, everybody got concerned. The scientists said, let's get out of here. It was bigger than they thought and uncontrolled. So they closed the ship up tight, turned off the air conditioning. Now, the temperature out there was 130 degrees in the day. But it was very dry, so thank God it wasn't humid. But we had 400 men crammed into a very small space so that nobody could sit down. Everybody was standing up. And people were passing out, and they couldn't fall on the floor. And they had to steam for hours to get out of the cloud of fallout. And it was much worse than they thought, because the explosion was about twice as large as they thought it was going to be. In fact, they thought it was going to be uncontrolled, and they didn't know whether it was going to just destroy the world or not. So, but it was rather terrifying at the time, and you had to turn your back to it, and then you had smoked glass, and you could turn around and look at it through that, and that was just, and they didn't know whether the shock wave was going to be a huge tidal wave or what. Actually, it was only maybe 3 or 4 feet high, and it just went right by the ship and didn't bother or upset anything at all. So everybody was evacuated with one exception. At Site Nan, there was a bunker that was built to house scientists, and one Signal Corps first sergeant, or sergeant first class. And they were, and as a matter of fact, this was the subject of a TV show. I think it was Kraft Dinner Theater, or one of those back in the late 50s, early 60s, and it was about all the men that had been left ashore. And what had happened was they thought that they were going to drown because the johns backed up, the bath toilets backed up, and started flooding water in there. But it was nothing serious. And on the TV show, they made it sound like they were going to be drowning from it. But we went back ashore and opened it up and got them out. And that was the first thing we did at Nan when we went ashore. So everything would be scheduled for the test, and we would be warned 24 hours before, and then there'd be a 24-hour countdown. And then when it came time for the, within several minutes of the explosion, they would start counting down from 5 minutes and counting, 4 minutes and counting, then they'd get down to seconds, and then was everybody turn your backs to the center of the blast and cover your eyes, and you could put your hands up in front of your eyes, and you could see the bones through the from the light from the explosion. That was rather something different, and nothing I care to see again, thank you. It was like looking at an X-ray of your hand. That's when the when the H-bomb went off. I believe there was one before it, and then an atom bomb, and then there was the H-bomb. And then we went back to Eniwetok for the rest of the tests. The men that I had ashore at Site Terre, we were not allowed back ashore again after that exposure. And in fact, they sent us back to Eniwetok after that. And all we had one uniform. That's all we had. We had left with a uniform aboard the command ship, and everything else was destroyed. So when they told us to get off the island, they just said, leave everything there, come aboard with what you got on, and that's it. So we had to live in the same uniform for about a week and a half, which was tough. And then we got back to Eniwetok and got issued new clothing and everything. So, but then we had about another six bombs, A-bombs, at Eniwetok. And those were at the other end of the atoll, which was pretty close. And we'd get up early in the morning to go see those, and again, turn your back and let it go off, and then go turn around and take a look at it as it boiled up into the sky. Oh, I've seen enough of those, but the thing that I picked up out of all of this was, if you're ever exposed to atomic radiation or an atomic blast, don't be as afraid of it as you would be if you hadn't experienced it. Once you've experienced it, you know that you can live through it, and that something may happen down the road. And a lot of guys I knew died from cancer and are dying today of other diseases that they got from atomic radiation. Knock on wood, aside from my right hand, I have not been bothered with anything. Just in the last 6 years, I've gone through my medical years from hell, and I've had everything from my knees replaced to my hand rebuilt to open heart surgery to a bleeding ulcer, but none of that's, other than the hand, is from atomic radiation that I know of. So the point that I'm trying to make is that you can live through an atomic blast, and you can live through it without being riddled with radiation or cancer. So